What ho, podcast pals. Welcome back to what is, I'm forced to admit, a somewhat astounding episode of Discontent Provider. This, cats and kittens, is not merely self-aggrandizing hype. Such crude rhetoric is beneath both myself and the world's greatest lurcher here, as well as being wholly unnecessary given that the outstanding brilliance and jaw-dropping acuity of the observations and the finely crafted songs in these seances is self-evident. No, what is astounding is that this episode even exists. You see, all I did was leave the house with my judiciously mute associate Arkham, a guitar, a selection of harmonicae, a holder for said harmonicae, and a high-tech gadget, or gizmo if you prefer, with the capacity to record audio. From our dear old homestead, we ventured o'er fields and footpaths to our happy place, that ever-gorgeous rural nook wherein we at our brightest and best, and began to consider the events of the week while recording our deliberations. Who could have possibly foreseen that these random, entirely uncalculated acts might lead to a topical podcast with a song at the end? It's baffling, is what it is. A series of entirely voluntary acts culminating in a specific outcome that some observers might describe as unfortunate or even tragic. Well, I fucking never. To paraphrase the words of a globally respected statesman, it happens in podcasting. I check it to the end. I am in contact with all the audio content platforms, and I will do everything so that this thing never happens again. And as the hairs on the backs of our necks stiffen at the chill and thrill of that barely perceptible gossamer-like satire, we shall press on with our usual doings, which may not be world-changing, but will not, unless something goes badly awry, end up with seven brave and good-hearted people being killed by murderous lying shitfuckers. For many, this week's biggest story has not been one of death and blood, yet for all that, is a tale of stout-hearted heroism in the face of overwhelming odds and the sort of monstrous oppression at which even Big Brother himself might well have balked. Should you have doubted for even a second that I refer here to J.K. Rowling's noble and disinterested challenge for Scotland's newly formed thought crime unit to come and feel her collar, well, you're not the listener I thought you were. The Harry Potter author's determination to call out the PC McStasy is, of course, the real meat on this week's newsbone, with social media and the opinion columns being filled with a roiling sea of mouth froth from both her ardent supporters and her fiercest detractors. I think we've all been around a sufficient number of varied and educative blocks between us to understand that Miss Rowling's performative posturing was, other than being a masterclass in getting the brand out there, every bit as trivial as pointless as 99% of the other spiritual flotsam that bobs about in the cyber sewer, haven't we? She knew that there was no chance of her being arrested. Those who may have registered complaints against her turfy tweets must also have known that she wasn't going to be arrested, so none of it meant anything when all was said and done, save a spot of publicity for a writer who is hardly wasting away for lack of attention in the general run of things. It did get me thinking, however. Why does anybody give the proverbial tin turd about what J.K. Rowling thinks of trans issues? This isn't, I should quickly point out, an attack on Ms. Rowling. I disagree with much of what she says, but she is as entitled to express her views just as much as is somebody who isn't an acknowledged international authority on Death Eaters. I think the reason for the fascination with her is that she was one of the first high-profile figures to speak against gender transitioning in the mainstream. Doubtless acres of text was issuing from the portable telephones of those in academia on the subject, but that's not exactly a mass audience, eh what? No. J.K. certainly isn't the first turf on Earth, but she is perhaps the most force, even more than the antics of Harry and Hermione, her crusade against trans women has defined her of late, which may have been an unintended consequence of an off-the-cuff tweet just tossed into the Twitter maelstrom on a quiet Thursday morning one day. The backlash against her original point was, and still is, intense, and, as a lady of letters, she has responded and continues to respond with posts that seem to have escalated exponentially in terms of both frequency and vehemence until now, for many, and perhaps even herself, she is the anti-trans woman on the internet, and dashed little else. Well, fine for her, I suppose, if that's what she wants to do with her time. It isn't my business. As I think I've said before, as a straight chap who is about as reconciled to their gender as one might reasonably hope to be, I'm all for people living their lives as best and as happily as they can. And I'm genuinely rapt with admiration for anyone that can brave the opprobrium of a still pretty conservative cultural climate and fundamentally change their very existence in order to seek joy and fulfilment. My gosh and giddy gumdrops, there are a frightful lot of cis people who don't even have the nerve to wear an elaborate hat. Now, while I'd hesitate to describe much of what she says as hate speech per se, I do rather think that Ms. Rowling comes across as a rather nasty piece of work. But I would also say the same for those who send her death threats and the like. Now, as I rather fancy I mentioned earlier, this isn't any kind of hit piece, takedown, or to use a word beloved of the tabloids, skewering of the lady. I chose her because she represents a deplorable trend and because she's been very visible in the news this week. The point I'm groping towards with my customary elan is that what she says shouldn't matter any more or less than anyone who spews forth their views into the grisly vomitorium of social media. Personally, I have no more interest in what the creator of Harry Potter feels about the trans issues as I would be in the views of Timothy Chalamet on the correct way of hanging a toilet roll, or whether or not Millie Gibson off of Doctor Who believes in Bigfoot. The sad fact is, however, due to an ever more moronic and infantilizing media, the online bloviation of the well-known actually becomes news. Why? Is it simply that the cats and kittens of the Fourth Estate are so bone-fucking-idle that perusing a few X accounts is easier than hauling their worthless kybers out of their chairs and doing some journalism? Partly, I dare say. Or maybe we, as a society, are such insipid starfuckers that citing the views of some celebrity or other, if they coincide with our own, represents what I believe is referred to as an appeal to authority, simply by virtue of them being relatively wealthy and successful. What makes it all the more vapid and laughable is that those who traffic in this twaddle are quite often the first to react with contempt and scorn when others do it to prove a point with which they disagree. Vide, if you will, the furious reactions of those who were incensed by lefty lovies interfering in the real world by expressing anti-Brexit sentiment. Dearie, dearie me, but they were fit to be tied, were they not? Yet, when Sir Michael Caine and a few others suggested that leaving the EU might very well be a wizard wheeze, their admiration and respect for Caine et al.'s worldly wisdom and patriotic sagacity was as fulsome as they were boundless. Yes, I suppose that an ally in a cause is always welcome. But to give undue weight to the opinions of somebody, anybody, whose qualifications to hold forth on geopolitical or sexual morality seems to be that they might be first in line to do a gruesome, sycophantic bit of banter with that tiresome twat Michael McIntyre on some prime-time excrescence is simply too silly for words. I would be the last person in the world to deprive anyone of the chance to spout whatever half-baked gibberish trickles into their mental sluice in an idle hour. After all, what else is this, albeit with some pretty sick harp? But for their doing so to become news, to shape any debate for good or ill, according to our personal inclinations, is merely another example of the distracting, irrelevant nonsense that makes up so much of people's thinking. You see, podcast pal, I've been giving this sort of thing a fair measure of thought of late, and it might even be said to have constituted something of a story arc over the last couple of episodes. So much of what excites discussion and furious shitposting is absolutely worthless drivel that only matters because people believe it matters. Cats and kittens taking the honours system seriously, hard-pressed citizens putting their exhausting and stressful concerns to one side in order to weigh in on Princess Kate's whereabouts, and now celebrity opinions. What we have here, it appears, is something of a loose trilogy, or an audible triptych. Yeah, I'll be frank with you. I'm something of a philistine on the QT, but what with the celestially lovely Mrs. Foxy being of the artistic persuasion, I now know what a triptych is, and I wanted to show off a little bit. Of course, I also now know what the phrase violent mood swing means, but I'll leave that for another episode. Anyway, this is the third episode in an unintentional series wherein I'm considering the amount of time and energy people devote to things that are thoroughly asinine and empty, and only bother them because they let them bother them. While we're at it, let's briefly consider the furore and brouhaha still doing the rounds about Nike's redesigning of the St. George's Cross on the New England kit, shall we? More unmitigated piffle, I'd say. I don't care one way or the other for flags, although I will concede that they are, as is their intention, a time saver, in as much as one that flies them is setting out their spiritual stall, and thus letting one know that they quite often attach greater significance to the symbol of their professed beliefs or ideologies than they do to the beliefs or ideologies themselves. And in all candour, I'm not fearfully sold on that type. Put it that way, if some punter feels that their deepest held belief in a cause, a nation, or even a sporting team can somehow be diminished or despoiled by somebody dissing a flag, they either don't believe in said cause, nation, or sporting team as much as they think they do, or that those things are absurd fictions that aren't worth believing in anyway. Put simply, if you need to have a constant visual representation of some sacred ideal fluttering before your eyes, either that ideal or your commitment to it isn't worth a quarter ounce of fuck dust. So what does any of it matter? I may have any number of objections to somebody's political outlook, but I couldn't care less about what banner they might fly. Should you want to wave a swastika about or an ISIS flag, you go for it, my dear. At least you've let me know in advance that you're probably not the sort of person I'd get on with, so I'll give you the widest of wide berths. Come to think of it, even a flag denoting views with which I agree don't do much for me. I'm a vegan myself, as some of you may know, but I'd run a mile from anyone brandishing a strange device that represents the cause, simply because I don't want somebody trying to get me to change Arkham's diet in favour of that weird dog porridge. I've known the lad for 12 years now, and I can say, quite confidently, that he simply wouldn't be down with that shit. Nevertheless, I've never felt the urge to tear down, burn, or desecrate a flag for the simple reason that not only is an idea or a belief non-combustible, a deliberate and malicious act of destruction isn't going to change the mind of whoever's holding the pole. Unfortunately, there are multitudes who don't seem to get that, and thus we're seeing the most appalling rows about an overpriced t-shirt that prevents people from addressing or challenging far more troublesome and important issues. On the whole, I feel the same way about statues. I can take them or leave them as far as it goes. Though it might behoove those who shriek that removing a statue of a slaver or some other ghastly plutocrat is somehow an attack on our heritage, that a bronze Edward Colston or some long-forgotten general waving his sword in frozen granite pomp upon a rearing horse is not our culture and heritage, but rather that of a ruling class that would have thought nothing of having you shackled and sold or hurled onto a battlefield in order to increase their wealth or glory. If I might be blunt, much of what we're taught or encouraged to revere and hold dear is naught but the purest cobblers, obfuscatory fictions promulgated by hacks and charlatans who would rather people squabble over some stone effigy, a bit of cloth, the correct form of address for a viscount, or what Patrick Stewart thinks about LGBTQ plus issues, then have a look, even for a moment, at what they and generations of their ilk have actually been getting away with. Oh, crikey Moses, that ended up being quite impassioned, eh, what? Well, time to relax with the song, I think. We'll be back next week with more of similar. In the meantime, if you'd like to comment, criticise, or simply dupe me into sending you a photograph of my balls so that I might be blackmailed into revealing the contact details of other bottom-of-the-barrel podcasters, you can email arkhamandi at discontentprovider@gmx.co.uk, or you can find us on Twitter, @foxyandarkham. For now, though, from the silver fox and the black and white dog, cheerio. Thank you. standing proud among indifference crowds for the best part of 200 years. A stony reminder of exactly what kind of asshole profits from blood and from tears. A time where the sentinel of our servitude, the guardian of time since past, an immobile and silent monument to the violence and oppression carried out by its caste. Nobody passing it by day to day knows its name or thinks about it one bit. But we know to our bones that it's cruelty set in stone, cast in bronze and chock full of shit. Fluttering bright every day and each night are the colours that simply won't run. A textile exaltation of a cause or a nation of ideals that will outlast the sun. But if for some reason, be it accident or treason, the banner should fall to the ground, it will spell disaster to the simple-minded bastards whose belief in what it represents is clearly unsound. If you can't love your land without a bit of cloth on hand, if catching fire makes you throw a fit, you're a pretty piss-poor patriot, a poltroon and an idiot. It's a symbol and you're just full of shit. Your deadline and they're screaming for a headline, but you're hungover and missed all the news. But it'll work out fine if you just quickly go online and cull a few celebrities' views. A MasterChef contestant who won 3 years ago is incensed by the additives in cheese. An actor from a shitty soap is advocating legal dope. A pop star says the motor trade is on its knees. So if you do some cutting, pasting, it's not your time that you're wasting, cause it's a famous name will guarantee hits. It's the duty of the Fourth Estate to generate lively debate, but you know deep down that you're full of shit. You know deep down that you're full of shit.